We are studying the book of Genesis. I'm on page 57, Genesis 9:1, and I call this chapter "Man Blows His Third Chance." This is the third chance, and it's not going to go well. God blessed Noah and his sons, and he said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth." Over 30 times in the Bible, God tells his people to be fruitful. 15 of those are in the book of Genesis. Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. God is the author of prosperity. He means for us to prosper. If we walk with him, he intends that we will prosper. But there are clearly times of tribulation and difficulty caused or allowed by the Lord, especially when he's trying to deal with us about something. And so the God of prosperity is also the God who deals with us when we don't do the right thing. Prosperity is about having enough and some left over for good works. That would be a good biblical definition, to have enough and then some left over for good works. Enough is relative to time and place, and it varies among people and cultures. One man is rich if he has 3 goats. Another man is poor if he has only 10. It just depends on where you are is what prosperity means. But it means to have enough and some left over for good works, as Jesus defined it. It is God's purpose and intent that we should enjoy life and his creation. He means for us to enjoy our life. That is what he wants for us. He just wants us to do it in obedience to him and in being covenant-keeping people. In Hebrew, it is Hebrew in thought that all that God created is good. It is Greek in thought that the material world is evil. Much of the history of the church has been negatively influenced by the rejection of that which is Hebrew and the embrace of that which is Greek. Now, God also sometimes causes calamity for our good. God is the author of prosperity, but he's also sometimes the author of calamity. In Isaiah 45, verse 5, he's explaining to his people why he who blessed them and caused them to be brought out of Egypt and lifted them up and made them a great nation, whatever, why all this calamity has come upon them. They assume that the enemy is attacking. They assume the devil's doing it. And God's trying to tell them, no, I'm doing it. God is never the author of evil. Evil is always caused by the abuse of man's free will. But he is often the God of calamity because he uses calamity to get our attention and get us to repent or to teach us what we need to know. Now, you know who else who does that? You do. If you're a parent, you do that. You tell your child they have to go to school in the first grade. That's a calamity. You tell them they've got to get stitches. That's a calamity. You take away their cart, that's a calamity. I assure you that those, from their viewpoint, all disaster has fallen upon them. No more car, got to go to school, got to get stitches, got to do this, got to do that. Those are calamities to them. And when we, as adults, look around at the things that happen to us, we don't often see them as we should, as calamity brought upon us by God, so that we will stop and think and ask ourselves, what is it God's trying to say to us? Now, some things that happen to us are caused by our enemy. Some things that happen to us, God allows. But even that, he redeems. He can use it in our life. But clearly, sometimes what happens to us is God ordained and intended. And it's important for us to be able to figure out when that is. When is it God's trying to say something to us? Isaiah 45:5, "I am the Lord, there is no other. There's no other God but me. Beside me there is no God, and I will gird you, though you have not known me, that men may know from the rising and the setting of the sun that no, there is no one else besides me. I am the Lord, there is no other." Can't get any clearer than that. Everything that happens, happens within my sovereign world. I either cause or allow everything that comes into your life. There's no other God. If the Greeks used to think that because the material world is bad and the spiritual world is good, that there was kind of like two forces, like dark side of the force and whatever. And they had a dualism. And so whenever something bad happened, they would blame it on the devil or the whatever god they thought was bad. And whenever something good happened, they would give credit to God or to whoever their favorite god was. And so what you have is a dualism. And we today have people who operate the same way. Whenever something bad happens, we say, well, it's the enemy. It's the enemy. And then when something good happens, we say it's God. When we do that, what we're implying is that we have two equal deities. One who causes stuff that's good, and one who causes stuff that's bad, and the good person can't stop that, or can't use it, or whatever. That we have a dualism. It's sort of inherent in our thinking. But we need to firmly understand the sovereignty of God. God causes or allows everything. So when Ben died, God allowed that. He allowed that to happen. God used it in our lives in many, many ways. When I got prostate cancer, God allowed that to happen. If I get fired, he might have caused that. If I lose a bunch of money, he might have caused that, especially if I'm being greedy and whatever the case may be. But sometimes God causes things, and sometimes he allows them, but he's always God. There is no other. Now, when I was younger, you've heard me say this before, when I was younger, when bad stuff would happen, I would say, "What are you doing, God?" As in, "What the hell are you doing, God? I mean, you know, you're supposed to be taking care of all this. You know, you're letting down on the job here. We just got a pick six on our favorite team. What are you doing, God?" You know? And my attitude was, we had three of them actually yesterday. My attitude was one of holding God accountable for my well-being and pleasure as if he were somehow or another my servant. The Lord is my shield and my butler. But the truth of the matter is that that is not true. Now, through many trials, toils, and snares, I have already come. And in the process, I've gotten a little bit smarter. And I've learned that there's a sovereign God, that he is a good God all the time. All the time he is good. And that when he either causes or allows anything to come against me that's difficult for me, that it has a purpose. And that my job is not to accuse him of malfeasance. My job is to try to discern the purpose. And so what I say to him is, "What are you doing, God? What is it I should learn from this? Tell me what I need to understand about this. Why is our country going to hell in a handbasket? Why have you abandoned us in terms of putting us in all of this difficulty, all of this stuff? Why have you done that? What is it that I'm supposed to know or understand?" That has served me very well, because it's caused me to align myself with God in good times and bad times. It's caused me to find the grace and peace of God in good times and bad times. Genesis 9, verse 2. "The fear of you and the terror of you shall be on the beast of the earth and every bird of the sky, with everything that creeps on the ground, and all the fish of the sea. Into your hand they are given. Every moving thing that is alive shall be food for you. I give all to you as I gave the green plant. Only you shall not eat the flesh with its life, that is its blood. And surely I will require your lifeblood from every beast I will require it. And from every man's brother, I will require the life of man. And whoever sheds man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. For in the image of God he was made, he made man. As for you, be fruitful and multiply. Populate the earth abundantly and multiply in it." Now, prior to the time of Noah's flood, men were not allowed to eat the animals. In fact, the animals were dedicated as sacrifices unto the Lord. Now, there were sacrificial meals in which man and God participated in it. So it wasn't like you never had beef or, you know, whatever. But you were not to eat the animals. They were God's food. They were the nectar of the gods. So it was the God's food. And there was one of the reasons for that, apparently, is that we didn't need the protein. And remember, because of the brachia, we didn't need the protein. And remember that, you know, in the garden, man and animal were collegial. They were friends. They, you know, Eve didn't go home and say, "Gall darn, a snake talked to me out of a tree." She wasn't surprised by that at all. She was just surprised by what he had to say. And we know that in the millennial reign, that man and animal will be collegial again. Friends, co-sharers of the universe. We're told that the lion will eat straw like the ox, and the lamb will lay down in the lion's den, and the child will play in the cobra's den. Bring you home, pretty serpent for your wardrobe, you know, you wear around there. Man and animals started off before the fall as friends, and they had a sacrificial purpose, but the regular eating of meat was not permitted. When the world went to hell in a handbasket, it did like it does now. It ignores whatever it is God says and just does what it wants. And so what happened is the world got to the place where the animals were just consumed at will, because, you know, we don't care about who we go to bed with, don't care about, you know, any of God's laws, we just do what we want. And so it was forbidden for them to eat the animals. And when God brought the animals into the ark, they came in very docilely to Noah. There was a friendship there. There was a trust. Now, when they come off the ark and they go out, seven clean animals of each kind and two unclean animals of their kind, they go out. God says to them, from this point on, you will be able to eat meat. But I will put a fear of you on the animals. In other words, I don't need you just to go out there and destroying very trusting creatures. I'm going to put a scenario on it where they are shy and wary of you, and whatever. So you can eat meat, and there are some rules about that. You study Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, you get all these various rules. But you can eat meat, probably because of the greater need for protein now that the rakia is gone. But in any case, he said that's the case. It won't be the case in millennial reign. And then he said, man is not to kill men. Not to kill men. By whoever sheds man's blood, I will require his life from man. Whoever sheds man's blood, by his blood will be shed. Now, that implies that there's going to be capital punishment, because how can God require his life? You know what I'm saying? It also requires, we also know that there's such thing as just war. Not every war is just. And there's self-defense. We know that those are moral exceptions to the don't kill men rule. And as for you, be fruitful, multiply, populate the earth abundantly, and multiply in it. All right, I think I've covered a bunch of this. Meat and fish are now given for food. New need for protein. The lifespan rapidly declines without the protective rakia. Animals are not authorized by God to kill man. Animals are made for man, not man for animals, in spite of what PETA and all the other people want to tell you. That's not the way it is. So, man is forbidden to eat the blood of any animal. According to the Bible, Leviticus 17:11, the life is in the blood. Now, another way to say that is the blood is full of living things. The blood is full of toxins and all manner of things. So the Jews were told when they were going to kill an animal, they were killed in such a way as to dump the blood in a big hurry. And that's why they slaughtered them the way they did. They killed them kosher. Because the idea was to get the blood out. And remember that when they would kill an animal, and then they would skin it and all that sort of thing, and in the sacrifices, certain pieces of the animal would be burned for God, particularly the fat and the horns and the hooves. God can eat that kind of stuff. And without getting cholesterol problems. Anyway, so the right shoulder and whatever went to the high priest or the priest so that they would be fed. And then the rest of it went back to the people as their portion. It would come wrapped in little brown packages and say loin on this and, you know, whatever. Laser Wolf. Anybody know who Laser Wolf is? Fiddler on the Roof. Laser Wolf is the 50-year-old grizzled butcher who Tevye agrees can marry his lovely virginal 18-year-old daughter right after they're singing that song about be careful what you wish for when you marry, because you could wind up with the wrong guy. Laser Wolf was a kosher butcher. He was a Levite. And he was wealthy because everybody came and got their meat from him. He would slaughter the animal. He would either slaughter your animal and charge you for the slaughter, and then package up the meat and give it to you. Or he had his own animals he would slaughter and sell you the meat in packages. You remember early in that show, there's young Seidel in his meat shop, and she's offered, she's trying to buy some meat, and he's wrapping the meat and looking at her like, there's a dish. And she's very, don't look at me like that. At any rate, that's Levites, butchers, that's what they did. That's how this worked. And we know that in the millennial reign, there will still be animal sacrifices, but there will not be the regular eating of meat.
All right, this kind of conflicts with the later on. They said, you can eat meat, And then I can remember somebody is on the roof and they said, now you can eat meat.
When they were told they could eat meat, they were given rules. Some things they could eat and some things they could not. Some things were unclean for them to eat. Pig, for instance.
Okay.
Right? On the sheet on the roof in Acts, which is Peter, when God's getting ready to open up the church to the Gentiles, Peter is getting ready for lunch. He's at the house of Simon the Tanner. He's up on the roof and he's praying and he has a daymare. He goes into a trance. And a big sheet comes from out of heaven and in it are all unclean animals, which the Jews were not allowed to eat. And the voice out of heaven says, take Peter, kill and eat. And no longer call unclean what I have now made clean. So the sheet on the roof thing has to do with the ability to eat pork. But they're told they can eat beef and fish, chicken, all the way back here at the time of Noah. Okay? It's a good question, though. Got him, he's always thinking. I wish you were here for my mountain presentation a couple weeks ago, but at any rate, I'm sure you got the tape and listened to it. All right.
That was a jail.
Man is forbidden to eat the blood of any animal. According to the Bible, the life is in the blood, and the blood contains parasites, waste, and other toxins not healthy for mankind. It's nutritionally dangerous to eat. It is not to be consumed by mankind. The blood of animals is a metaphorical type for the blood of Jesus. Remember, all these physical things that God gives them, images and stuff like that, they have meaning, spiritual meaning. So He gives us parenthood to teach us unconditional love. He gives us marriage to teach us intimacy and relationship, you know, whatever. And so the idea that you would kill the animal and the blood would pour out and you would not eat the blood and the animal was a sacrifice and whatever, that's a type. Remember that Abel offered just that, a sheep, properly prepared. Cain offered his best fruits and vegetables. God did not accept Cain's offering. He wasn't mad at him. He didn't call him a bad name. He didn't say, these are inferior vegetables. He said, if you will do right, then I will accept you. If you will offer an animal, I will accept you. If you go buy a lamb from your brother, and whatever, I will accept your offering, but I won't accept this. Now, Cain got all crosswise because God wouldn't do it his way, and so he wound up in trouble. But the whole point about the killing of the lamb, down through the entire history of the world, is designed to show about salvation and redemption. Remember, the first two animals killed in the world were killed by God to provide covering for Adam and Eve. Because the fig leaves weren't cutting it, man. That's the first two animals killed. God had to kill His own animals in order to provide covering for man. In the light of the pre-flood violence, murder is expressly forbidden. Now, Genesis 6:13-22. See if I can find that here. This is the book of Genesis after all. Genesis 6:13-22. I'm coming up on it here.
Page 50
it is. Genesis 6:13-22. And God said to Noah, this is before the flood, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence because of them, and behold, I'm about to destroy them with the earth. One of the reasons that God got to the place where He said, I got to wipe it all out and start over, is because violence had become commonplace. Murder and revenge and revenge killing, lex talionis, had become so common that man was just cavemanish. They were brutes. And not only were they eating meat, which they shouldn't, but they were killing people left and right for little or no reason whatsoever. Just a bunch of murderers. It was the mob. And He said, I got to start over. So in light of the pre-flood violence that we just spoke of, murder is expressly forbidden here by God. God makes a point of talking about murder. Now, he didn't have a conversation about adultery, although He's not for that any more than He is murder. And He didn't have anything about stealing, although He's not for that either. But He particularly points to murder and say, this has got to stop. You must not do. And if anybody murdered another person, they are to be executed for it. And you're not to murder. Yes?
The other night, right here in Arnold City, Wayne and I went to a movie, which was really good. But anyway, they checked my purse. It's the first time I've ever had them check my purse. And Wayne said, because they're looking for guns.
Yeah, because she had a Coke inside there because I took. No, it was for me. It was for me. It was like I hate to pay, you know, $5 for 2 ounces. So what happened is that I got this Coke. I said, we're going to take this in. So they open up the purse and he sees the Coke. He doesn't care about that. Yeah, that's right. She even owned to it because that's Nancy. He's like, I'm guilty, you know. Well, actually, ma'am, all I meant was. But the deal is that he was looking for weapons.
Why? Do you know
why? Because there's been so many murders in theaters now.
Oh, okay.
Because people are bringing weapons in and shooting people up in theaters.
Because, you know, I mean, here he was talking about violence filled the earth.
Yeah.
Like, it's the first time to me that it's like they were searching for guns in our local
theaters. Well, here in the U.S. of A., land of the free, home of the brave, land of law and order, we suddenly have people rising up from out of nowhere, shooting people for no good reason whatsoever. Many of them young kids, because they've been corrupted by the culture around them, and they just feel like they're supposed to get up and shoot people. The guy who shot up the Baptist church in Savannah, I think it was, or Charleston, the kid, he said afterwards, the people were so nice to me, I almost didn't do it, but I knew I had to. That's what he said. He said, you're raping our women, and you're stealing everything we have, and so you have to die. This was a, I don't know, 16, 18-year-old kid who did this because he'd been feeding himself on hate literature and stuff, whatever. Jackie, you have a point?
Yeah. Well,
the problem is it's uncontrollable. And remember, a lot of these people who are doing this are not Arabs. These are kids from our own culture who are buying into stuff, and not all of it's from the Middle East. Some of it's white skinheads and stuff like that.
I volunteered to strip search all women walking in the door for the Sunday school class from here on out.
That's a cruel and unusual punishment, Sam. Not allowed. That would not be allowed. In fact, I'm sure we wouldn't have a class. You know, it'd be nice to see you move away from the men to the women, but, you know... There have been complaints, and we've found a number of fingerprints on men's drawers. But
that's just nasty.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah. I'll get paid back. Anyway. But it was fun. Anyway, moving on. The movie we saw was Bridge of Spies. I really recommend it. It's one of the best movies I've seen in forever.
That's Tom Hanks.
Yes. And it's about the Francis Gary Powers incident. It's a good movie. Recommend it. Bridge of Spies. You very seldom see movies. We very seldom go to movies because there's so few of them that are decent at all. I mean, you talk about our culture. All you got to do is look at the movie offerings in the theaters, and they're just ridiculously banal. Yeah, whatever. Anyway, but Bridge of Spies, I recommend that to you. Pardon? It's about the Gary Francis Powers shoot down the U-2 incident and the exchange of the prisoners. It's after World War II. It's Cold War. Okay, but it's very, very. It's a true story. True story. All right. In light of the pre-flood violence, murder is expressly forbidden. Once again, God tells them to populate the earth abundantly and multiply. He's starting the human race all over again through Noah. Now, he will do this again at the millennial reign. Remember, when he comes back, the vast majority of the world's pagans are going to be wiped out by the cataclysms that accompany him, the topological asteroid comet kind of things. And there will be all of these resurrected people who are going to live in the holy city that hovers over Jerusalem. There will be the Jews who are going to live in Israel. And then all of these people who are called the sheep. Remember the sheep and the goats? Those who didn't help Israel are goats and they're sent to hell. The rest of them, the sheep, are the base population for the new world in the millennial reign. And there'll be probably hundreds of thousands of them. Maybe millions, I don't know. But they're going to be the base population. The world's going to have a really small population again. And over the next 1,000 years, they will be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Now, first of all, the earth is, the mountains are raised in the valleys. We got Pangaea. The earth is wide and broad again. And we have few people upon the earth, relatively speaking. And so what happens is that there's a lot of space to populate. But we also have people who can breed for 1,000 years. So that, there's a lot of that goes on. People were told that a person dies at the age of 100, they will be considered as having died as a mere child and accursed because of dying at such a young age. We're told that people will have the lifespan of trees. We're told that people will wear out all the works of their hands. So whatever clothing they make will be worn out and have to replace it. You know, not just because they want to go to Dillard's, but because they actually it actually wears out on them. So,
if that happened tomorrow,
yeah,
I would not go to Israel. I would be outside Israel.
If that happened tomorrow, you would be raptured with the saints, and you would go to the marriage supper of the Lamb, while Jesus beat the snot out of the Antichrist and all of his armies to protect Israel. After he had done that, when you've now come back, because you've come with him, he's going to divide the world's remaining population into two groups, the sheep and the goats. The goats, he's going to tell them, you did not feed me when I was hungry, you did not shelter me when I was homeless, you did not clothe me when I was naked. And they're going to say, when did we not do that? We don't remember that. He said, when you failed to do it to the least of these, my brethren, you failed to do it to me. Go to hell. So the Antichrist, the first prophet, and these people are the first people in hell. To the sheep, he's going to say, you fed me when I was hungry, you clothed me when I was naked, you sheltered me when I was homeless. Enter into the joy of your master. The king has arrived, and he is saying to his people he rules over, enter into the joy of your master, because you did the right thing. You gave what to the poor what they needed, and particularly the Jews, okay? And so he's going to say, enter the joy of your master. And that group of people is going to now be the base population of human beings, besides the Jews, human beings, besides the Jews, in the world. Now, the people who are coming back with Christ, they're going to be resurrected bodies. They're not going to die anymore or get sick. They're going to be 25 and buff. Sam's going to look good again. All that. So, all right, it's going too far. All right. So, does that answer your question? Okay, wait, if it does, say so, huh?
Well, you have just said that the Jews will go back to Israel.
The Jews will be called back to Israel to live, all of them.
Right. But not being a Jew, I'll be called to live somewhere else.
But you'll be what, huh?
Me, not being a Jew,
yeah,
will be called to live somewhere outside of Israel.
Yeah, actually, you will be living in the heavenly city. You won't be. You're not going to be.
I won't come back.
Huh?
So I wouldn't come back.
Yes, you will. The heavenly city, the heavenly city hovers over Jerusalem. It's 1,500 cubic miles.
Okay.
Miles cubed. Okay. The heavenly city holds Jesus and His throne, and all of the resurrected saints from all time: Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and you. Okay, and you're going to live there, and you're going to be sent out to work in the earth, to teach, to be a messenger for God. You're going to rule and reign with Christ, and you'll be living there. You will no longer be human like you are now. You will have a resurrected body. Jesus has had the only resurrected body that's ever been seen. He walked through doors, but he ate fish. He could apparate like Harry Potter, but he could shake your hand. So you'll have the kind of body that we're meant to have, like Adam and Eve were meant to have, that is both corporeal and non-corporeal upon request. So you're going to not get sick, you're going to not age, you're going to eat but not have to. You know, there's all kinds of things that you're not going to have to do because you're not fallen anymore. Now the sheep are people who are still human beings. They've not died. They've not been resurrected. They are like we are now. They're human beings on the earth. They live a natural human life. They can get sick. They can have miscarriages. They can die. They will grow old. All of that will happen to them because they're living here on the earth while we're living in the city out of heaven above the earth, but traveling the earth, doing things in the earth. Does that help? Well, they were human beings. They were human beings who were not believers because they would have been raptured. But they were kind to their fellow man and to the Jews. Now, we talk about the two great commandments, which is love God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself. Love your neighbor as yourself is as vital to God as is the first one. And those people, they will not be judged at that point because they're still alive. They remain alive and they continue on with their lives and they go find places they want to live, and you know, because the world's got to be populated and all that sort of thing. They're like Noah's children going out figuring out what to do. It's going to be a very interesting world for the next 1,000 years. They're going to be very human, and they can get sick, and they can. The leaves on the trees, we're told, are good for healing, and the waters will be purified by the water that flows out of the throne, coming out of the new city, New Jerusalem, and their trees will bear fruit 12 months of the year, like in the garden. So we're going to have an Eden-like earth again. But we're going to have several classes of people. We're going to have the saints who've died and gone and come back and been resurrected. The Jews who are alive human beings who can get sick and who can die because they haven't, whatever. And then the Gentiles who are alive and can get sick and can die. But these Gentiles, he's starting off with a bunch of good people who cared for their neighbor and that sort of thing. And he's going to go for the next 1,000 years. I'll be right there. Barbara, be right there. Hang on. You see what I'm saying? Okay, yes, Barbara.
Okay, I'm very confused.
Okay.
Because I thought at this point that hell wasn't opened up yet.
Hell is opened at the second coming of Christ. Okay. The first two people to be thrown into hell are the false prophet and the Antichrist. It says so in the scriptures.
So is that the abyss?
That's what... The abyss is the angel prison in Sheol. Hell, the place that is a place of eternal torment.
I thought they said he was bound.
Yeah. Satan is bound in the abyss. He's not going to hell at this point. He doesn't go to hell for 1,000 years.
Okay, that's what I was confused.
Yeah.
He and the Antichrist were the first in hell.
No. The Antichrist and the false prophet are the first in hell. Satan is bound in the abyss. He's going to be released at the end of 1,000 years from the abyss to test those people upon the earth who are still here as whether they walk with God or not. Okay, so the abyss is like the basement of Sheol. Sheol is not hell. Hell is another place. The first people to go into hell by scripture are the false prophet and the Antichrist and all the goats that were found to be not feeding Christ when he was hungry, not sheltering when he was homeless, not clothing him when he was naked.
So that happens prior to the millennial reign.
That is at the beginning of the millennial reign.
Okay.
So that's the first population of hell, and the sheep are the population for the new earth. New heaven and new earth, remember? The new earth, the sheep are the population, the human population. There'll be Jews, which are humans. There'll be Gentiles, which are humans. Remember, the Bible says that during the millennial reign that the Gentiles will come up and admire the Jews, and they will return what was stolen from them and all that sort of thing. So you've got Jews and Gentiles living on the earth in the human condition. You have all these saints who've died and gone to be with the Lord, and or raptured right there at the last bit, and they've gone to the marriage supper of the Lamb, they've got their new glorified bodies. They're going to come back and live with Christ in the city where he lives. And they're going to go out as representatives of him, witnesses.
To the Jews.
To the world, to the Jews and the Gentiles. I mean, how are the Gentiles going to learn about Christ if they weren't Christians? You're going to have a Sunday school class. Yeah, get ready. You're going to be teaching. 1,000 at a time.
Desserts.
We are going to go bear witness to the men and women of the earth who do not know Jesus over 1,000-year period of time. They're going to live in regular human communities. Some of them will start and build churches. Some of them will ignore all of that. Some of them will choose not to be religious. Some of them will choose to be. And what will happen is over time, people are going to make their decision about who they are. And at the end of the 1,000-year reign, Satan is released from the angel prison, the basement of Sheol, and he goes around and he tests each man of the human beings who are living on the earth, not the saints, and they decide one way or the other, they're going to go with him or going to go with Christ, and then they are judged and sent into hell. Yes?
Sorry. I'm trying to get it straight in my head here. So, are those who were on earth at that time, the sheep, do they not actually see Christ?
Yeah. They see him. He'd be on CNN every night.
But, okay. I just wondered, because at what point in the Philippians verse that every knee will bow?
Well, every knee is going to bow and every tongue confess, both in heaven and under the heaven.
Well,
when it says the knee shall bow, it doesn't mean they're going to agree with him. It means they're going to acknowledge that he's boss.
Okay.
When it says every knee shall bow and every tongue...
It doesn't say they'll accept him as Lord.
No, it doesn't say that. It says they shall confess him as Lord.
At the end of the millennium.
at the end of the millennial reign. The point is, even Satan is going to say Jesus is Lord. I was wrong. He's Lord. Now, remember that the Bible says in the book of Revelations that at the end of the world, at the end of the millennial reign, both Sheol and death and Satan are thrown into hell. All of that is then consumed into hell. And the last person into hell is Satan, and he goes in and everybody's taunting him. He's not the boss of anything. Now, we've been studying this on Monday nights for some time, so some people are beginning to get it. But I mean, I've got stuff I've written on this. If you want something, I can send it to you. But it takes work. It takes work. Yes.
Okay. When is it before the millennial reign? And the people who are the goats, are they the ones who have the mark on their marked? You know, the 666.
Well, the truth is that they may both be marked.
Both who?
The sheep and the goats.
Okay.
Because the sheep and the goats are non-believers, non-Jews, non-Christians. So they either had the mark or they avoided it, but they didn't commit themselves to Christ. They aligned themselves with the Antichrist, at least publicly. It's like the Diary of Anne Frank.
Okay?
When Hitler came in and took over, a lot of people aligned themselves with Hitler. Some people publicly acted like they were, but they were really hiding Jews, you know. And then there were people who were actually rebelling against him.
It's like my Jewish friends who tell everybody they're Democrat and then they get in the booth, they vote Republican.
I don't know that they'll ever be safe, but yeah, I know. Just teasing. So yeah, these are people who, when he comes back, see. God is separating them on the basis of whether they care for their fellow man or not. That judgment is not based on whether or not they know Christ. And that judgment is not their final judgment. These people are going to live on the earth for 1,000 years, after which time they'll be judged the final judgment. This is just a separation of the sheep and goats, and those people are allowed to remain on the earth just on the basis of whether or not they care for their fellow man.
Wait.
Yeah.
Sometime you've compared that to Oscar Schindler.
Yeah. Oscar Schindler is a really good example. If Jesus came back right at the end of World War II, he would have gathered a whole bunch of people together, and all the guards and all these kind of people, whatever, and people who weren't Nazis, but they were just bad people, whatever. They hated God and whatever. They'd be thrown into hell. Oscar Schindler would be allowed to continue to live on the earth, even though he was not a born-again man. Oscar Schindler is a very interesting person. He was a womanizer. He was a fraud. He was a cheat, a business cheat. He was a bankrupt on many occasions. He was a Nazi officer, and yet he had compassion for the Jews. There was something that just clicked inside of him, and he could not. He gave up everything he had except his automobile, and he later regretted not selling that in order to save a couple of hundred Jews from the camps, especially the children. And when he died, having never become a Christian, you know, what he did strictly out of his heart. He never became, I mean, he was a Christian because he was a German and everybody in Germany was Christians, but he never became a practicing Christian. In fact, afterwards, after the war, he was not successful in business. He was still a womanizer and all that sort of thing. When he died, the Jews buried him in the graveyard of the righteous dead, which is right outside of Jerusalem. All right, other questions here? I don't mind taking it all the way down the road because we've got there. Yes.
So we could be, someone here could be witnessing to Oscar Schindler.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Okay, and so what the witnessing that will be done there, that's the same thing that we in this room right now in real time.
Yes.
Are supposed to do.
All right. Let's paint this. Let's paint this picture for a minute. Okay.
Oh, covering. I like that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay. No comment. All right. Let's paint this picture. Okay. The Antichrist has taken over the world, and he looks unbeatable. There's been 7 years of really difficult time on the earth, and it's really a hard place to live. Between natural things like fires and floods and earthquakes and all that kind of stuff, which God causes, and the persecution of everybody who doesn't go along with him, which the Antichrist causes in the last 3.5 years. It's been a very difficult time. The great tribulation at the end, where the mark of the beast is and all. It's been a very difficult time. And the Antichrist has got an army of all the nations on the plains of Megiddo for the purposes of eradicating the Jews. Yet one more time, somebody's going to try to eradicate the Jews. And has persuaded everybody that if they do that, then that'll fix everything. Which is, by the way, a demonic thought that's carried itself down through history for all time. Well, we can go back to the time of Esther with Haman and all that. All right, so they're all there ready to attack. All right, then all of a sudden, we begin to have comets. The sky goes dark. Think of movies like Day After Tomorrow, or think of movies like Deep Impact, or these movies about comets hitting the Earth and what it happens to the Earth and all that sort of thing. So we have comets. Remember that in Deep Impact, the big comet was going to wipe the Earth out. Remember Morgan Freeman was the president? He's always the president when you're Willis. But then what happened is that Bruce Willis went up there with his guys. They dug in and they split it into two pieces. They gave their life so that only the little piece of comet, Biedermann, hit the Earth. So it didn't destroy the whole Earth, but it sure tore the heck out of it. Okay, so the comet asteroid kind of activity that is described here is going to cause the Earth to have shifted its tectonic plates. And when that does, the mountains, which were formed by the shift in the plates, are going to fall into the oceans. And the ocean, and it's going to raise up flat, and then the Rakia gets pulled back by God. So the Earth will be totally rebuilt, recreated. Remember, we're talking about the third chance. It'll have another one. Be totally recreated in fairly short order. Okay. So what happens is that many people, good and bad, so to speak, are going to die from this. When mountains fall on you, it doesn't ask you whether you're a Republican or not. It just falls on you, okay? And when valleys open up, remember the movie 2012? They were flying out of Vegas, and the car and the street was open up as they were driving, whatever. All of that catastrophe, that cataclysm, is going to greatly diminish the living population of the earth. And that's when Jesus comes back. Now, he's going to defeat the army of Armageddon. He's going to inflict wrath upon the earth for 45 days while you are at the marriage supper of the Lamb, having a nice piece of veal, you know, and some gefilte. So at any rate, can't even still eat good. You know. At any rate, so what happens is that the many, many people are going to die, good, bad, or indifferent, from the cataclysms, because that happens. But when it all settles down and when it's all rebuilt, you're going to have a bunch of people who are going to look around and they're going to, wow, what's going on? And they're going to know, because of the preaching and everything, that when I remember Elijah and Moses preached for 3.5 years and couldn't be killed. And so they're going to know Jesus is one. They're going to be called up to see him. And he's going to divide them into two groups. Okay? So he's going to say, you guys did not help your neighbor. You joined with the Antichrist. You didn't protect people who need to protect, whatever. You didn't take care of me when I was there. You go to hell. The rest of the people, he said, I'm pleased with you. Not that you're Christian. Not that you're born again. I'm just pleased with your behavior. God loves it when rich people who aren't Christians give money to the poor. God loves it when people take care of other people, whether they're born again or not. Okay, that's not the issue. Though those people are going to continue on their life, and people are going to live as long as 1,000 years because of the way they just are for now. Okay, at the end of the 1,000 years, now some people are going to die during that time, and if they're Christian and they die, they'll be resurrected immediately. And if they're not Christian and they die, they're going to go to Sheol where everybody else is. But many people are going to live this period until we get to the end of the 1,000 years. At the end of the 1,000 years, Jesus has demonstrated for 1,000 years what the first Adam should have demonstrated, the glory of God. The second Adam, Jesus, will have ruled and reigned over the earth, over the garden-like earth, over the unfallen earth, in such a way as to manifest the glory of God. It wasn't plan B. The plan A was never defeated. Man and Satan did not defeat God's plan. He just postponed it. because God came around and put it all back together. Jesus will rule and reign for 1,000 years. The Jews will live in Israel. Where their territory is laid out. They will go up to the temple. They'll go up to the temple. The temple's going to be rebuilt. It'll be bigger because it's going to be full of dining rooms. This is in Ezekiel. And what happens is they're going to go up there. Gentiles will go up there to participate at some level because they want to. But everybody's going to know who Jesus is. Everybody's going to see Jesus. They're also going to see you coming into town and holding seminars. And I mean, people are going to be curious. What do we need to know about this new world? And so we're going to be going out among them, and we're going to be teaching them, and in many ways you teach human beings things. And you're going to be talking to them about the Lord and what they should have known and didn't, and pointing to scriptures that they probably heard but didn't pay attention to. And many people are going to succumb to that teaching, and they're going to give themselves to God, and they're going to live as Christians in the earth, but human Christians. Okay, not until they die, and when they get their bodies. And many of them are going to go, well, I don't know. Now, if you think that's strange, that people see Jesus on CNN every night, and they see us apparating in and out, and they won't make a decision for Christ, remember, He walked this earth for 3.5 years, raised people from the dead, healed the lepers, gave blind eyes sight, and they didn't believe that either. So you have to remember that God reveals Himself to those who seek Him. And some people are going to go, whew, missed the goat thing, you know? And there's a really cool piece of land in Nevada, and if I get there before everybody else does, I can stake my claim. Because there's almost nobody around, okay? And they're going to be about the business of living. The world will be about the business of living. I don't know all the details and whatever, but it'll be about the business of living. We're told enough to know they live, they die, they get sick, they're healed, they age, and they live as long as trees, many of them. They died 100, you know, whatever. You heard me say all this. So what's going to happen is that the people of the world who do not know God are going to be taught about God, about Jesus and God, by all of us. The king is ruling. Jesus is sitting on the throne, and he's ruling, and we are ruling and reigning with him. So, and Satan has been removed out. He's been taken out. These people are going to live in a world without a tempter.
What time is that?
He comes whenever he wants to. And so the thing is, I'll be done in a second. Okay, people are going to be subject to the flesh and the world and the flesh, but not the world, the flesh, and the devil. They're going to be subject to their own desires, and those people in the world that create the culture of the world, they're going to have impact on people too. But it's going to be like it was before Adam and Eve fell, and it would have been had they not fallen for the next 1,000 years. Because remember, if Adam and Eve don't fall, that's no guarantee that their children would not, or some of them would not.
Right.
You see, you have two kinds of people on the earth even after that, because you have the sons of Seth and the sons of Cain. All right.
Free will.
Free will, you got free will. Free will is always. You'll have free will in heaven. You'll have free will. Free will is, it's part of how we are made. We're made as tripart beings with free will in the image of God. All right, I can send you on an ebook the study on the eschaton, and you can plow your way through it and do the best you can. And I will, I teach these classes from time to time, and so if you're interested in going through one, it's a lot of work and it takes time because, you know, this, you can see it's. So just email me if you want me to send you something that you can read, a book that I wrote on this. The ones that I'm using to teach people right now on Monday nights. I'm not gonna, no more questions because we've had nothing but questions. Okay, somebody pray us out.